Okay, we are at the Shundahai Network House in Pahrump, Nevada, and we are speaking with
Dr. Bonnie Eberhardt Bob.
And you were saying that you had written a couple medical magazine.
Well, they were presentations that I've made at like scientific events, or the major work I've written concerned the acculturation of the self concept in the Western Shoshone people. In other words, how they've changed in thinking about themselves with more exposure to whites.
And what were some of the titles of those particular journals?
The Society for Biological Rhythms in May. I've had two things appear in that, and I think it was the Proceedings for Biological Rhythms. But those studies involved the periodicity or cyclicity of certain instances of infant death, for instance, sudden infant death syndrome and infant homicide. And I was comparing those two because oftentimes, cases of SIDS are really cases of homicide, and sometimes cases of homicide are really SIDS.
Okay. Speaking of death and some of the impacts of but our society and looking at the fallen
At Fallon, Nevada, at the leukemia cluster that they've just found there. There have been so far 12 diagnoses of acute lymphocytic leukemia. There's a population of about 8,500 in Fallon and 12 cases within just the last year or so. And the normal incidence of acute lymphocytic leukemia is 3 in a population of 100,000. So they're well overrepresented in that population. So the legislatures were trying to find, they were trying to get groups of people together to find possible causes for this. All the victims of leukemia are under the age of 19. So the legislature called for, they had the people from Woburn, Massachusetts, from, John Travolta's movie, A Civil Action. But these were the real guys, the woman and the doctor, the man who studied the Woburn cases, and they concluded it was water. But whenever we were at the hearings, it became, over the course of 3 days, became pretty apparent that it was not the water in this case, that it's something else. And the Navy, because Fallon Navy base with the Top Gun, the planes that have gone to the Gulf War, is located right outside Fallon. They had the EPA, they had the mosquito abatement program, they had, various entities that may have been involved in the cause of the leukemia, and they were all presenting testimony. It became pretty clear to me as I sat there that they weren't so much interested in brainstorming and finding what the potential cause was. It was more like every group came up and said, well, it couldn't be us because, the attorneys for the city of Fallon were there, and I just felt that underlying the whole thing was the economic impact of what was going to be occurring in Fallon economically. We're going to lose, are people going to move out? What's the effect on property value and taxes? It was more that than what caused this. And that was really upsetting. And I think I was vindicated in that harsh thought because certainly there are people there who are really concerned. But I was vindicated in that, I think, because within about a day after the hearings, the city of Fallon hired a public relations firm to come in and kind of whitewash what's actually going on. And there were two of us or some of us there who the Navy kind of danced around and said, well, it couldn't be us because the planes came back. They were on the, after they came back from the Gulf War, they were stationed on the East Coast, and they didn't come here until a couple of years later, and it was like 94. And we were like, whoa, well, that would be right on time for the depleted uranium, because depleted uranium, if, and there are two cases of leukemia with children on the base. So it's something that it's a little bit different in that the with depleted uranium, if somebody's working around it at the base, they can bring that home in their clothing, and the kids could touch it. It could, you know, and we could pass it when we touch. So it's a little bit different. And
when you speak of depleted uranium, and we've jumped from the issues of leukemia at Fallon, maybe you could give us a little bit of an insight to what your hypothesis is.
I think that there has been burning in that area. The Honey Lake, I think it's called Honey Lake Munitions area, which is right near the Paiute Reservation. Actual fires that have occurred whenever they drop, they do the, you know, the they have a overflight testing with these same aircraft that were in the Gulf War. But they also, we believe, are testing depleted uranium bombs there. There, and there have been fires in that area. And we think that the depleted uranium or the tritium or something has possibly, like Chernobyl, lifted into the, with the fire. The fire lifts it into the air and then redisperses it back onto the ground, back into the water in certain areas. And that's what, there's a group of us really believe that the Fallon cases of leukemia are caused by depleted uranium.
Can you give us the scientific kind of what happens with depleted uranium and how it enters into the body?
I don't know that much about depleted uranium. What I do know about is tritium. And I became very familiar with that with the fires in that are proposed or were proposed in White Pine County. What I found that brought our attention to it was it was already passed. It was, they said, oh, we've been working on this for 3 years, and we can't imagine why you're trying to give us input now. But it was, we totally by accident found a plan by the Nevada BLM White Pine District, or Ely District, I'm sorry, the Ely District, which includes White Pine County, Lincoln County, which surrounds the test site, the nuclear weapons test site, and part of Nye County. What we found was a plan that had already been passed and was supposed to have had public and tribal input that proposed to burn 3.6 million acres of a total 11 public land acres over a period of the next 20 years. In that 3.6 million acres were 875,000 acres of pinyon juniper, which is the indigenous food of the Shoshone people, and which is a sacred tree and a very special tree, and the state tree of Nevada. And three-quarters of all wilderness areas protected in the state of Nevada in that district. So you're talking about 550,000 acres of wilderness study area, and the entire wilderness area of Mount Moriah, which is approximately 6,100 acres. And that was rather appalling because, you know, I'm married to a Shoshone man, and I know what the pinyon tree and the pinyon means to the Shoshone. I know what that, I can't say it. I guess I haven't celebrated that we won yet. let me get regroup. I'm married to a Shoshone man, and I know how much the pinyon tree means to the Shoshone people and to the native people of Nevada. And to think that it was going to be burned was really awful. But then, knowing what I knew about the underground testing and the above ground testing and all the leakages at the test site, I became really appalled when I looked at the map and saw that much of that land surrounds the nuclear weapons test site. And it seemed to me that what we were talking about, you know, I remembered in May, my husband had done a walk because of the treaty. He organized a walk around the Yucca Mountain and Nevada test site, which we're going to do again. And I remembered that Los Alamos caught fire then, and that stuck in my mind. And I remember Hanford caught fire, and I remembered, you know, Rocky Flats and their fires. And I kept thinking of all these nuclear facilities that just in the last year have started to burn. And here we were talking about the Nevada test site and the areas around that starting to burn. So I started to investigate what was actually there and what would happen when radionuclides were burned. And in my conversations, I've had some, you know, a lot of experts come talk to me and say, you must stop this. Because what happens with the tritium, I was mainly looking at plutonium. Plutonium has a half-life of 26,000 years, which is quite a long time. And whenever it's burned, you know, what they do is, like, you think of a forest fire and how the wind results from the forest fire. And this has actually been proven out, like with Chernobyl. The same thing happened with Chernobyl. Whenever they had the fires in the forest after the Chernobyl accident, what happens is that tritium lies in dust, and plutonium lies in dust. Rather than, you know, whenever they go out and they'll say, we're going to test for, you know, the presence of tritium and plutonium, and they'll dig a hole. Well, you don't dig a hole. It's on the dust. So, you know, maybe they're monitoring it the wrong way. And they're also using, like, Geiger counters and that kind of thing, and they're probably missing it because it's a really complex process to measure tritium. It's so subatomic, you know, that it can be there and you can't catch it. You know, it's so small. So what happens is it's laying in the dust, and whenever the fire starts, it's going to lift, the wind from the fire will lift that tritium up into the air. Whenever it goes into the air and disperses, who knows where it's going to go, who knows who's downwind. But the bad part comes. Just in the latest studies from like 1995 on about the mitochondria of the cell, and this is really interesting, whenever that tritium comes back down into the water, if it lands in water, it has the ability then to make a bond, a chemical bond with oxygen from the water. And whenever it does that, it becomes 250,000 times more dangerous, more biologically dangerous with the bond of that oxygen atom. It becomes so dangerous that if a woman drinks that water and she's pregnant, and she's carrying a female fetus. You know, whenever we're born, whenever women are born, we have all the eggs we will ever have come with us when we're born. And this tritium, if a pregnant woman carrying a female child drinks that water, all the eggs in the female fetus can die. That's powerful stuff. I mean, you're talking about a real biological disaster, a real genocidal kind of thing to the people. And it's mostly Shoshone surrounding that area, and it's mostly Shoshone who eat those trees. The other thing is that for years, the pine nut tree has taken up the tritium into it through the water, through the groundwater, and through the dust. It's taken it into it, and it has a tendency to store that tritium in its cellulose. Once it's in the cellulose, it doesn't migrate too much, but it will migrate whenever they set that on fire. And that's what we've been fighting, and we were just able to get that, and mostly because of the economic or environmental justice issues with the native tribes. They had no consultation over the three-year period with native tribes. And whenever they found out about it, it was after the decision had already been made. So whenever I found out about it, which was like in December, and the decision was made in November 20th, a group of us formed together and started writing letters and talking to the BLM. And we told them that they've only done an EA, just an environmental assessment. And we told them that they must go in, given this new information. They must do an environmental justice section, because certainly the environment is going to be damaged. Certainly the people, the animals in it. I found a pesticide plan as part of this, just by accident, that had already been passed, again, with no input. And these pesticides, whenever they form together, some of them are like picloram, which is called Agent White. It was used in Vietnam. It was one of the it was used in 5 of the 15 defoliants used in Vietnam. And they're going to burn this. Well, some of it, whenever it burns, has a chemical reaction with something else. Some of it forms phosgene gas. All these things that they've never monitored. And all we're doing is asking them to please monitor these things. Please see where they are. Please find the hot spots. Please don't set them on fire. And we finally succeeded in getting what we got was we were asking for a moratorium on the burn until they did a complete EIS. And we just succeeded in doing that. And the completion of the EIS will take approximately 2 years. So we have about 2 years where we must be vigilant, and we certainly have to be careful. If there's a natural burn, what does that mean? The people responsible for the burn would be the Ely District BLM, Bureau of Land Management in the state of Nevada. And they're going to be burning radionuclides, probably tritium and plutonium, that are in the vegetation and will be released into the atmosphere, as well as various pesticide and herbicidal agents that they are spraying, Forest Service is spraying, Department of Agriculture is spraying, and private individuals are spraying into some poisonous combination. And they're going to set that all on fire quite innocently. And that will also enter the atmosphere. And some of those are known carcinogens and mutagens.
How many acres do they want to impact with fire, and why do they want to burn it?
They want to burn 3.6 million acres out of a total of 11 million acres, I think 11.6 million acres that they control. Their reason for burning it is that they say that the pinyon juniper, when it burns, burns a very hot fire. And they're trying to have fires to prevent fires. They're trying to burn out the heavy growth so that whenever the fires do start naturally, they'll be less hot and therefore less dangerous. But what they don't seem to understand is this is different soil in Nevada than in Colorado, and the pinyon tree holds the moisture. It shades the ground and keeps the ground cool and actually forms sort of like a mat underneath it that keeps the moisture in. So they're probably misguided on their geological thinking as well.
That brings us to the run, or the walk around the test site.
Yeah, last year, last May, my husband, well, for about a year or before that, had decided that, see, the Nevada test site and Yucca Mountain is all Western Shoshone treaty land, and the treaty is still in full force and effect. It was an agreement between the U.S. government and the Shoshone people in 1863. And what it did was give the white people the opportunity to pass through and not get attacked. It gave them safety in their routes and the train routes and the mining, that kind of thing. But certainly at that time, they weren't expecting the kind of mining and forts and military that they see today. And the treaty is still in full force and effect. And what Johnny does is because Yucca Mountain and the Nevada test site are on the land and because the Shoshone are opposed to that, what he does is walk the perimeter or run. A lot of the guys are running and a lot of the older people are walking. But somehow the point is to put their feet back on the land and mark it as their own, as part of their own. It's only part of the treaty land. And pray with each step to take back the land for the people. Here I go again.
Well, and one of the things that was really magical was, that's a good thing. The trees, I really thought planting the trees last year was such a magical little prayer as well that came along with that. And I think all of those things bring so much energy. That was, I think, the most phenomenal thing for me was the wind of emotion that surrounded the walkers as they came into peace camp.
Yeah, that was really beautiful. It took about a week, you know, and they started out there. The original plan was to go from Warm Springs, Nevada, and to circle the test site in both directions, one moving toward Tonopah and then onto the test site. And the other leg of the walk was to go down through closer just through the desert wilderness area and also meet at the test site at the same time. Well, there weren't quite enough people so ambitious the first year, and school was on. So a lot of the younger people who could run and walk, you know, were still in school. So Johnny decided to just do the one half that went toward Tonopah and be visible. And they planted about every 3 miles, they planted a willow with the flags on, and they prayed for that along the way. And it took about 7 days. And then that last morning was the Saturday before Mother's Day, and everybody came into they all marched and ran into the test site for the sunrise ceremony. And that was quite some success. And he plans to do that again this year. And hopefully we can make both legs of the journey. Hopefully we'll be able to listen to me. he's my husband, so I feel like I'm in there too. But hopefully he's going to be able to do both sides, both legs of the walk completely around Yucca Mountain and the test site to reclaim.
If folks are interested, how would they contact Johnny Bob?
Well, Johnny Bob could be reached at area code 775-964-2210.
Okay, and through the organization here, if they wanted to join the run or contribute somehow to the event of the walk.
Okay, there's like lots of information about the whole Mother's Day action and the walk and everything. My burn statement, if people are interested in that, is on www.shundahai.org. Shundahai is spelled SHUNDAHAI.org. And the phone number 775-537-6088. And there's all kinds of information on that about what they can do and ride boards if people are having trouble getting here.
The walk also brings everybody into focus for Mother's Day. And what's on the line for that?
Oh, gee, the Mother's Day celebration has been held for quite a few years at the test site. I think the focus this year is going to be Yucca Mountain because that seems to be something that we need to devote our attention to at this time. So I guess the Mother's Day is going to have, well, the Saturday before is going to have, well, Friday, we're going to have a lot of nonviolence training, that kind of thing, a lot of those kind of workshops, and just get the camp together. Saturday, we're going to have a lot of speakers. They're mostly all indigenous speakers. The chief of the Western Shoshone will be there speaking, and a lot of people who have been involved in the struggle will be there speaking. Workshops and preparation and planning for what will happen on Mother's Day. And on Mother's Day, I'm sure we'll have some kind of organized activity somewhere around the Yucca Mountain and or the test site. So that's where we'll make the plans of what we will do to fight it this year.
We're speaking with
Dr. Bonnie Eberhardt Bob. I'm the program director at Shundahai.
Okay, well, thanks again. If you are interested, you can contact Shundahai at www.shundahai.org or call 775-537-6088. Shundahai. And we were just speaking about the impacts of the burn as we've come to know it, and what maybe you could explain once again what the burn is and then how communities could get involved in finding out if they are being impacted by this procedure.
The burn seems to be a program taking place throughout most of the western states caused by the big fires that have been occurring over the last few years. And what happens is the BLM makes plans to do prescribed or let it burn. They use a let it burn policy. So if a natural fire starts, they just let it burn. And their thinking behind it is that it's going to get rid of a lot of the understory, and it's going to get rid of a lot of the heavy burning trees like pinyon trees, which burn very hot and therefore will decrease the number of fires. I found the one in Ely District, but whenever I contacted people like, for instance, Walker River Tribe, who uses the pine nuts in Ely District, what they found out was Douglas County is also being burned. So I think what people could do, I mean, what I would suggest is to get into the BLM Nevada, and you have to spell it out, Bureau of Land Management Nevada, into their website, and then go to your district and see what the prescribed burns are, and it'll also have the natural fire plans. And I think that they're taking place all over the state of Nevada. I know I've had complaints from Douglas County and also from the Reno area. And one thing people can do is this. Most of these burns, from what I've seen, only use environmental assessments. They don't go for a full environmental impact statement. And that they're saying there's going to be no damage to the environment, and we certainly know there may be and there will be. So I think what people can do is demand, with new information, demand an EIS, a complete EIS on all of the burns.
I do a lot of forest work myself in Mendocino County, and we actually would love to burn, but the density prohibits that because the fuel loading is so outrageous. But the problem down here is not so much the fuel loading as it is the radioactive chemicals that are dispersed throughout the soils.
That's what we believe because, you know, there's been 13 billion curies of radiation came off of the above ground testing, And then the years of above ground testing, 50% of those tests have leaked. So we think that there are hot spots. You know, like I said, the half-life on plutonium is 26,000 years. The half-life on tritium is shorter. I believe it's like 12 years or something. But that means 120 years till it's completely gone, or essentially completely gone. So you're talking about long time spans. And that stuff is still out there. It's in the roots of the trees. It's in the water. It's in the dust. It's in the layers. And they're not testing properly. A Geiger counter won't do it. You have to use the microelectrodes and all. It's very sophisticated.
If folks want more information about how to find out what's going on in their communities, who can they contact?
I would contact your BLM. The webpage has to have the prescribed burns on by law. They have to have public input. Even for the EA, they have to have public input. And somehow they've been making that information really negligible. And when you get the documents are very hard to read. But I'd ask for some help on that. And certainly, if you look at the website, at the shundahai.org website, you'll see the letter I wrote. And maybe that would be a good place to start, because I tried to make things a little simpler and say, this is what it's doing. And this is how you've neglected, the BLM has neglected what they're supposed to do.
If a community would recognize the need to have further information and that the BLM may not be the place to get it, where can they go to get more support for these kind of events that are happening in their neighborhood?
Well, you could contact Shundahai at www.shundahai.org, and that's spelled S-H-U-N-D-A-H-A-I. And the phone number there is
775-537-6088.
It's 775-537-6088.